ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
Before the president has made a decision, Stephen Miller is very much in his ear, making a very forceful argument. He does have a lot of influence over the president.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
Pressure is mounting on Angus Taylor to declare his hand. To announce a challenge to Susan Lee for the leadership of the Liberal Party, go to the backbench and muster the numbers, or concede he doesn't have the numbers and fall into line. Patience is wearing thin. The message from an array of colleagues across the factions of the Liberal Party is it's time for Angus Taylor to put his hand up or pull back. The Liberals, they're contemplating and calculating their future. All the while, the Prime Minister is meeting Israel's President Isaac Herzog at Parliament House. Welcome to Politics Now. I'm Melissa Clark, filling in for Patricia Karvelas while she tends to some secret squirrel business for the ABC. She's always got some projects on the go.
And I'm David Spears. Mel, it's great to be here with you. A couple of weeks ago on the pod, I serenaded PK because it was her birthday. Today, happy birthday to you. I won't do the full
thing,
but happy birthday, Mel. Great to be sharing your birthday here on the pod.
It's nothing like a busy day of politics to celebrate a birthday.
Exactly. What a gift.
What else could I possibly want to do?
And it is all going on, right? Because by the time you listen to this, things may have developed. We're in that zone.
Or they may not have. It's not really clear.
No, it's not. Look, it certainly has the vibe, this building, that something's going to happen probably today. And by something, we're talking about Angus Taylor quitting the front bench. He has to do that before he can seriously hit the phone to colleagues and announce that he's running and explain why he's running. And then presumably, you know, the plan is for others to quit. This is often how things are done, to mount the pressure and show that this is untenable and there has to be a change, swing the party behind them. But talking to, you know, one of his senior backers a few hours ago, they were still saying, look, maybe today, maybe tomorrow. It's still a little unclear exactly when. I think probably today. The complication is what you mentioned, the visit of the Israeli president. That would be another awkward look for the Liberals to be, you know, Angus Taylor to be resigning and counting a challenge.
Coming after the National Day of Mourning, in which we saw coalition dramas.
That's when the Nationals decided to break the coalition, on the National Day of Mourning for the Bondi victims.
And now we have an important visit of Isaac Herzog at Parliament House in Canberra as part of this visit, and potentially we're looking at a leadership spill coming off. The timing's not great.
No, there are no good timing options here, because I know we're getting down into the weeds of the mechanics of how this is all going to happen, but this is where we're at with these things, and often it's the mechanics that can play a really important role in whether the leader limps through to the end of the week or not. Now, it's a complicated week because the House is sitting, all the lower house MPs are here for the Liberal Party. The Senate is in Senate estimates, and not all of them have to be in Canberra for that. They can zoom in, probably not using Zoom, but they can beam in for their, you know, their Senate estimates session. I think the feeling is you'd have to have a 24-hour notice period at the least for everyone to be here for a party room meeting. That's why Angus Taylor would be looking at doing it today, so that it can happen. Friday morning would seem the most obvious.
Because Parliament's risen by then, so the House of Representatives isn't sitting, so that frees them up from obligation. Senate estimates is done, but it's still easy for everyone to just delay their flights home.
You don't have the expense of bringing them all back to Canberra to have a special party room meeting. Most of them, the overwhelming majority, would be here. Anyone who's not would have time to get here. It's open to Susan Lee, though, to say, righto, let's go tonight. As in Wednesday night. I don't know if she would, but
this could be this is a tactic that's used in politics sometimes, right? Is if you try and surprise your opponent before they're ready, before they've had a chance to make their case, convince people to switch sides, sometimes you can force an early vote and hope that you defeat them. That's definitely a tactic she could do, but do you really think she would? She's shown every inclination to dig in as hard as she can. It would be a very risky move to expose yourself to a vote where I imagine she is also not certain about the numbers, because no one seems to be certain about the numbers at the moment.
Well, Malcolm Turnbull was reminding us on Radio National Breakfast this morning, your show, that this is what he did when things were coming to the crunch. He said, OK, let's have a go. He saw off Peter Dutton in the vote that took place. And then it was a few days later that the Dutton forces wanted another crack at it. And then that's when he demanded a special petition for everyone to put their names to wanting a spill. And that's the question now for Susan Lee. Look, I think ultimately it comes down to how confident are you that you've got the numbers. Now, right now, speaking to those in the Taylor camp, shall we call it, they reckon they have the numbers but don't sound terribly confident. One said to me, well, I'd like to have a few more and have a bit more confidence around that number.
Well, this is interesting, right, because there's the ideal approach to taking the leadership, and I think if Angus Taylor had his way and what he might have hoped to be able to do, which is convince a fairly large chunk of the moderates to come over and support him, even if that took a little while to materialise, but have one go, have a clear victory and have a clear path at the leadership. But we seem to have patience running out from those around him. I think we can point to people in both the moderate camp and the conservative camp in the last couple of days who've now been publicly saying this: if someone is going to challenge, they need to do it now. The patience isn't there. The timing isn't there for Angus Taylor to have the luxury of trying to make sure he's got all the numbers plus a few extra up the sleeve just in case. We've got the likes of Maria Kovacic saying, you know, as a key moderate figure who wants to see Susan Lee stay in the job, declare your hand if you're going to do it. But we've also had John O'Dunham, who is a key conservative and someone who's supported Andrew Hastie in the past as well, who's like, well, if Andrew Hastie's vacated the field, this is me now interpreting, if Andrew Hastie has vacated the field, then Angus Taylor needs to act in that space. And he is publicly saying, if there's to be a challenge, you need to declare it. So,
and I think that's really important, right? Because sure, Andrew Hastie a week or so ago pulled out of the running, but how long is that good for? If beyond this week, Angus Taylor hasn't pulled the trigger, does Andrew Hastie then come back into the mix, or do those conservatives who want Andrew Hastie start urging him to return to the field here? So it's complicated. Ultimately, if Angus Taylor makes the move this week, I think the conservatives would all vote for him, even those who, you know, would have preferred Hastie. But I think the conservatives would hold. The moderates don't sound like they're budging from Susan Lee at all. But there is an important block in the middle. I think they're the ones to keep an eye on. There's roughly a dozen who are either unaligned or whatever you want to call them, but they're not moderate or conservative. They sort of float in the middle. I think they're the ones to watch here. Now, clearly the Taylor camp is confident that it has enough of them, and maybe the news poll this week did influence them, but I just think that's the uncertainty right now as to who's going to prevail.
I want to come back to this process question because the mechanics, because you rightly point out it's so critical here, and you touched on it before with this idea of, well, if Angus Taylor decides this is the time to go, what does it require to do that? We've talked about Malcolm Turnbull in the past saying to call the special meeting, a meeting of Liberal MPs that hasn't been planned. He insisted that Peter Dutton give him a list of names that showed he had a majority that wanted to have a spill motion before he was prepared to call everyone to Parliament. Does Angus Taylor need to do that?
Depends who you talk to. Well, so after Turnbull did that, it created outrage amongst the Conservatives, who said, hang on, this has never been done before. This is completely unfair. All it should require is, you know, a couple of people to call the spill and there should be a spill. After that happened, I think it was in 2022 or 23, Kevin Andrews, the late Kevin Andrews.
I think it was 23, but again, everyone seems very hazy process.
Anyway, some years ago, he wrote down the rules. Here's how it should happen, and it shouldn't require a petition of everyone to put their name to it or a majority to put their name down. But some Liberal MPs say, well, that's never been adopted by the party room, these Kevin Andrews rules. I've never seen them. So even that is a little vague, the status of those Kevin Andrews rules. Bottom line, I think it's still up to the leader to decide this. If they haven't settled it formally within the party room, I think it's still up to Susan Lee to decide when and under what circumstances she is going to call a special party room meeting to spill the leadership. Now, obviously, if you had a bunch of resignations, say you had Angus Taylor and a bunch of others today saying, we're quitting the front bench, this is unsustainable, we need a change, it's going to be a pretty bad look, I think, for Susan Lee to simply say, no, we're all fine. The pressure would absolutely build. So how tenable is it to resist that and say, well, we'll do it next time we're back in Canberra in a couple of weeks?
But I think this is where it gets interesting tactically from the point of view of the Angus Taylor's camp and what they're prepared to do. Mm. If Susan Lee wants to insist on seeing a large number of resignations or a full list of a majority for a spill motion, are the people who support Angus Taylor willing to put their name down and for it to be publicly seen, or at least seen within the party, that they are officially backing Angus Taylor in that process before necessarily being clear if he has the numbers? Because if they were to declare support for Angus Taylor to have a spill motion, either by resigning from the front bench, or if you're a backbencher, putting your name on a list of names that says we want a party room meeting to have a spill motion, but you're not quite sure if Angus Taylor is actually going to succeed in that, you've shown that you're not supportive of Susan Lee's leadership, and that might impact you if Angus Taylor isn't successful. So I feel like there's a bit of tactics to be played about
point.
Are you willing to be public with your support of Angus Taylor when no one really seems to know exactly what the final outcome is going to be?
No, these moments, it happens on both sides of politics over the years. We've seen it, Mel. It's a risky moment for a lot of members to put their name to one side or the other. And look, a further difficulty for them is being sure that Angus Taylor is going to perform better than Susan Lee to re-establish the Liberal Party as what it stands for, and to pull back those votes that have, so many votes that have drifted to One Nation and votes that have obviously over recent elections drifted to Labor as well. What is Angus Taylor going to do that's different to Susan Lee? It's difficult for him to spell that out in private phone calls before he's quit the front bench. Mm. But that all has to happen as well. If things are as tight as they are, he needs to be talking to, once he's done this, talking to those in the centre and on the moderate faction about why they should jump on board with him, because that right now is unclear.
Yeah, and it's giving the rationale to his colleagues to justify doing it. But there also has to be a public rationale. There has to be an explanation to voters to say the Liberal Party is changing. Well, what's changing about it other than the person at the top? And he's going to, if he proceeds this down this line, he's going to have to make that case. I thought it was really interesting that we heard this morning, as MPs were coming into Parliament House, we heard from Andrew Bragg, who's been a very outspoken moderate and someone who's made it clear that he thinks Susan Lee should be given a bit longer to make the case. He was again saying this morning that she hasn't really had a clear run at it, that there's been two coalition splits in very messy ways. We've ended up where we are at this point in the year. She's working on immigration policy that the party has requested that to work on. So there's still this sense of, has Susan Lee really been given enough time? And there is that chunk of moderates who think it's too early.
Was it Andrew Bragg, I think, saying she should be given until the budget and the budget reply? I mean, it's interesting to put a sort of a clock on it, even if you're a supporter of Susan Lee.
It does seem to be a delayed execution you're putting just a later time frame on it.
Yeah, look, there's no denying that Susan Lee has made mistakes, and even her supporters will acknowledge that and say, look, you know, ultimately this comes down to performance. And if she's not seen to be performing, then the party has to move. I think, you know, as much as we're focused on the mechanics of how this is all playing out, I think for a lot of the voters who'll be, you know, looking at all of this as a bit of a sideshow or, partially interested in what's happening, I think the gender issue here is going to be interesting as well, and difficult for the Liberal Party to explain as well, even though they're not. Some of them sotto voce are talking about this as, oh, we need to be wary of how this is going to go down, tearing down the first female leader the party has ever had so quickly. Angus Taylor will need to be thinking about how to address that.
Look, just before we move on to other issues, I do just want to have a little more of a look at the perspective of how Susan Lee is handling this process. Yep. There's been so much attention on Angus Taylor and Andrew Hastie. There has been quite a bit of revelations about the party room meeting that was held, the regularly scheduled party room meeting on Tuesday morning, and that Jane Hume, prominent Liberal, sitting on the backbench, free to speak her mind, that having spoken her mind on Sky News that morning, making it very clear she was very upset with the state of the Liberal Party, then directly asked Susan Lee what she was going to do about it, to which Susan Lee had responded that the answer is simple, disunity is death, stop talking about ourselves. That didn't seem to be, did that response from Susan Lee to that effective challenge from Jane Hume didn't seem to go down well in the party room from the Liberals that I've spoken to. What have you heard?
Yes, similar. And it's an obvious point. And yes, I think Susan Lee is right that to a degree that the disunity, the split in the coalition, I mean, it has been a circus. All of this clearly is a big factor in what we're seeing in the polls, right? So if we can stop all of that, we should be right. I think it's going to take a lot more than that, though. What does help build unity is direction. And I think that's a big missing piece of the Susan Lee leadership over 9 months has been, yes, there were some headland speeches on the economy, but it's this direction about here's where I want to take Australia that there needs to be far more of. And maybe that's what Jane Hume is hinting at. Maybe this is what Angus Taylor has up his sleeve, you know, when and if he does make a move. But it's this direction of here's where we want to take the party. And that includes some big ideas, maybe not the detailed policy just yet, but some, you know, be brave when you're at this point. You need to be.
And I think if we're looking long-term future of the Liberal Party, there also has to be some sense of how to reconcile with the big thorny issues that continue to cause the Liberal Party and the coalition trouble year after year. Things like climate and energy,
yep.
Those issues have been papered over at the moment, but the divisions within the party will be there regardless of whether it's Susan Lee or Angus Taylor at the helm, and there needs to be some way to manage through that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Susan Lee, if she was sitting here, would surely say, oh, we do have an energy policy. We resolved to get rid of the net zero target. We have a plan to bring prices down. But, you know, we all know it was a pretty paper-thin policy. And there's an immigration policy coming. But, you know, in terms of who the Liberal Party is trying to appeal to, there just doesn't seem to be enough there.
All right. I want to turn to the visit of Israel's President Isaac Herzog to Australia. We have seen over the last few days, and we've had it talked about on the Politics Now podcast in the last couple of days, about the scenes that we saw in Sydney with the protests about his visit. He's come to Canberra to meet with the Governor General at Yarralumla. He's meeting Anthony Albanese at Parliament House, not going to be giving a speech in the chamber or any of those kind of elements that you might have.
Or even appearing in the chamber, which, Mel, from my memory, usually if Parliament is sitting and a head of state is in Canberra and in Parliament House, they would at least appear, maybe not addressing Parliament, they would sit in those seats up the back.
Yes, there are a couple of seats on the floor of the chamber where dignitaries can come and sit and witness proceedings and be acknowledged by the Speaker for their presence.
But why wouldn't that be happening? Is this about trying to avoid any sort of moment that allows the Greens or others to make a point? This is a very, very carefully managed visit to Canberra and Parliament House.
Well, if Anthony Albanese as Prime Minister is trying to execute what he says is his aim, which is to bring the temperature down, then he will likely try to limit the opportunity for there to be any of those kind of moments where there might be protests by Greens members or others in the chamber, or to try and suggest that there's a strong political overlay to this visit when the message from the government consistently has been this is about assisting with grieving, this is about providing comfort and solidarity, it's not a political visit. I mean, that's become a little more contentious since some reported comments from President Herzog himself saying that he wanted to try and mend the relationship between the two countries. So I think that's been a little bit muddied, but we certainly see Anthony Albanese really trying to press home this point of the need to take the temperature down.
I thought yesterday, this is Tuesday afternoon, when Anthony Albanese was asked by the Greens MP about the ugly protest scenes we saw in Sydney on Monday night. The Prime Minister's response in that moment, I thought, was emotional. There was a little bit of anger there, I think, from the Prime Minister as well. But it was quite a powerful moment for Anthony Albanese, urging every side here to take the temperature down. This is not a football game. That you can't just be all one side, all the other side. He returned to talking about why Australia and his government has backed recognition of a Palestinian state, why a two-state solution is the best outcome here, which we haven't really heard him talk much about since the Bondi terrorist attack. So he clearly felt comfortable. And this is while the Israeli president is here in Australia. Anthony Albanese has gone back to talking about the need for a two-state solution. I thought that was significant. He looked the most confident, but, you know, clearly passionate about this centrist, the need to really dial that temperature down and hold that sensible middle ground, as he would call it, on this issue, and keep those conflicts away from Australian shores. He just looked more confident than we've seen him since the Bondi attack, I thought, on this whole issue.
I thought it was really interesting because I feel like in the last couple of weeks, certainly over the summer period since the Bondi terror attacks, we've repeatedly heard the message from the Prime Minister and other senior cabinet ministers of Australians don't want conflicts from overseas played out here. Mm. And that message has come across, but I don't think I've heard the more fulsome explanation of that rationale, the policy rationale that the government is taking to try and achieve that aim of having social cohesion here. This does seem like the first time that he's been brave enough to come back in depth to explain that position.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget, for weeks after the Bondi atrocity, Albanese was being hammered by many in the Jewish community and the Liberal Party as well for not doing enough on anti-Semitism. He was looking very vulnerable on all of this and, you know, belatedly called the Royal Commission and so on. This week, you've got those on the left ripping into Albanese for inviting Herzog to Australia. So he's copping it from the pro-Palestinian movement for even having this guy here. So yesterday, in that moment in Parliament, I thought was a moment where you've seen Albanese, and we saw this a bit last term, but particularly over the last few months, really copping it from both sides of this debate and strongly arguing for that centre line and that centre position. And it was, I just thought it was the most confident we've seen him on this for quite a while. I'm writing about this for tomorrow as well. There's some interesting polling as well. This idea that we need to bring the temperature down is very strongly supported, unsurprisingly, by many in the community as well. And I just don't think sometimes we forget that when we see those ugly protest scenes and the debate that, you know, that dominates. There's a big bulk of Australians who do agree that we've got to dial it down.
There does seem to be that mismatch between portions of the community for whom this is personally meaningful, has an outsized role in their political view.
Yeah.
And then there is another cohort for whom this is not a significant political issue at all, might have sympathies or concerns or even perspectives, but it is not anywhere near their top 1, 2, 3, or 10 issues that might concern them politically. There really is quite a stark range of differences in how different people, different voters, different members of the community are coming at this issue.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, we would be remiss to not be talking about some of the substantive elements of policy making and lawmaking that is going on at Parliament House this week while the leadership dramas are playing out and while this contentious visit from the Israeli president is taking place, because, of course, the House of Representatives is sitting. Senate is going through estimates, as we said right at the start. I've been looking more at the House of Representatives, noting that the government has introduced legislation for its changes to superannuation taxation for large super accounts. Spizzy, I find this very interesting because you remember at the end of last year, Jim Chalmers gave a pretty big back down and announced that he would make some concessions on the policy that he'd originally wanted to put in place. It wouldn't tax unrealized gains of these superannuation accounts worth more than $3 million, announced some other changes to the scaling of the changes to tax concessions that he wanted to put in place, including putting in an extra tax rating or an extra tax bracket, I guess, for accounts that earn over $10 million. He would put it up to 40%. But when he made that concession at the end of last year, that was done unilaterally. That wasn't stitched up with either the Coalition or the Greens as a deal to get it through Parliament. So now that he's introduced it to Parliament, there's sort of another round of negotiations still to go, and it seems like the Greens are going to push for even more changes.
You would expect they would push for more changes, but you would also expect at the end of the day, and the government would know this, that if it comes to a vote on what's on the table, are the Greens going to vote against taxing big superannuation accounts, more than $3 million, more than $10 million? Taxing them more? I mean, it's hard to imagine they'd vote against that to stick with the status quo. So
I think
yeah,
they can bluff them into,
They could push for more. But ultimately, I think the government knows that, you know, at the end of the day, the Greens are really going to vote against this. Hard to see that. So, yes, they have to go through the process and make sure the votes are there. But I think they'd be pretty confident that they will get there in the end. And look, this is a couple of things. Government getting on with business. Business of government continues despite all the chaos on the other side. They'll be keen to make that point. But it is also about this effort to, repair the budget, but also accommodate that higher spending that we've seen as well through, yes, higher taxation. And we know there's conversations going on in the lead up to this year's budget about capital gains tax as well and winding back some of the discounts there. So again, it's about trying to find ways of increasing the tax take on capital in particular, whether it's in your superannuation account or property investments, to try and fund the program of spending that the government has.
Like the public hospital and NDIS deals that we've just heard signed, that's going to take a lot more money and it's got to come from somewhere. That's it for Politics Now today. Thanks for joining me. PK and Fran will be back for The Party Room tomorrow. If you do have questions, please send in a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and they'll do their best to answer it. See you later, David.
Bye-bye.